Over the centuries, the world's greatest wordsmiths have crafted the most beautiful sentences ever written. Shakespeare.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day?
Austin.
There is no charm equal to tenderness of heart.
And Jermaine Pennant.
I pulled two birds and I went home, which is nearly a proverb.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club that's less Jane Austen, more Charlie Austen. And you can listen to us right now by typing Football Book Club wherever you get your podcasts.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do. Dave, what are you doing, Dave? I'm afraid, Dave. My mind is going. I can feel it. There is no question about it. I understand the rap metal genre. I want to read a book written by James Corden. Any book. I'm thinking of getting heavily into crypto. Dave, it's Crowley time.
Crowley time!
Hello, and welcome to Crowley Time with me, Tom Crowley. With me, Tom Crowley. You hear a lot about the real you, don't you? Whether it's in a judgmental way, oh, now we see the real you, don't we? Or whether it's in a fond way, let them see the real you. A lot of people around us seem very convinced of who the real you is, and put a lot of stock in the idea of this one central primal part of your psyche that dictates all the other aspects of you that issue forth from it, and are keen to suggest that you can never change, evolve, or escape this core, this base, real you. And this real you is, depending on context, alternately a craven, selfish creep, a violent, reactionary thug, or a sensitive, gentle inner child who must be handled with great care, like a newborn otter cub. But there can only be one real you, surely. That's what makes that you real. But if the real you that you share with a potential romantic partner on a date is the same real you that takes over when you and a friend butt heads over a found suitcase full of money, and is the same real you that emerges in the form of physical bravery, or a lack thereof, when your loved ones are threatened, then what sort of warped emotional jellyfish must it be? A vain, egomaniacal poet with no fear. A symphony-composing infant Rambo whose courage is matched only by his cowardice. The essential nature of this real you starts to sound a little suspect, doesn't it? Perhaps the more accurate notion is that if there is indeed a real you, and I'm speaking to you, the listener now, if there is one, it cannot be singular or definitive in its entity. It must have as many separate departments within it as a shopping centre, be as eclectic in its looks and sounds and smells as, well, a shopping centre, and have as many different people inside it as, well, yeah, a shopping centre. In fact, perhaps that's what Walt Whitman meant when he wrote, "I am large, I contain a multiplex." And a veritable multiplex of entertainment awaits you, dear listener, in this latest episode of Segmented Revelry, designed to please every part of you, both the internal real you, with its food court and kiosk for buying phone cases, and the external fake you, which in this metaphor is the attached multi-story parking structure or something. Have fun, you beautiful building.
Relax. Let your arms hang limp at your sides. The dosage of the drug has been very carefully controlled. You should detect the first effects of the drug in the coming seconds. For the purposes of the experiment, it is crucial that you do not enter a state of distress or upset.
Dr. Bergerman?
Not now, Larry.
Doctor, I don't want to disturb the experiment, but...
Then go away, why don't you? Shoo, shoo!
But there's a small fire taking hold in the office next door.
Oh, fuck.
Right, I must apologize for my absence. If you were able to hear my conversation with Larry before, then rest assured we have thrown a dampened towel on the fire. If you did not hear it, then, well, never mind. Relax. You should feel the drug starting to take effect at any moment. Remember, for the purposes of the experiment, it is crucial that you do not enter a state of distress or...
Dr. Bergerman?
What is it now, Larry?
I'm really very sorry, Doctor. I don't mean to interrupt.
And yet you seem adept at finding ways to do so.
Yes, I really am very sorry.
Just tell me what the matter is, quickly.
Well, it's just that we must not have dampened the dampened towel enough, because the towel itself now seems to have caught fire, and now it's once again taking hold.
Larry, I don't have time to deal with every little fire that takes hold around here. I'm in the middle of crucial research. The dose has already been administered to the subject.
I know, Doctor. I'm sorry.
So just go and dampen another towel and apply that to the first towel, or, better yet, go and find a fire extinguisher. I think there's one in the employee lounge. Yes, you go look in there.
Yes, Dr. Bergerman.
Right. Relax.
I'm sorry, Doctor.
Oh,
it's just,
what?
I really am sorry. It's just that under the terms of our insurance policy, lab assistants aren't qualified to carry out emergency safety measures unaccompanied. I need a senior member of staff to observe, otherwise it might invalidate
well,
our...
Well, fine. Buggering bloody...
Right, I must apologize again for my further absence, and that it was rather lengthier that time. If you were once again able to overhear me speaking to Larry, then please do not distress yourself. Everything is well in hand. It just took a bit longer that time because while Larry and I were discussing the matter, the fire had time to spread quite far from its point of origin. And also the fire extinguisher was not in the employee lounge, but in the unisex toilets. But now, and if you didn't hear anything before, just don't worry about it. In fact, don't worry about anything. Relax. Let your arms hang limp at your sides. You should now be feeling the full effects of the drug. Don't forget... For the purposes of this experiment, it is crucial that you do not enter a state of distress.
Dr. Bergerman?
Oh, whatty, Larry? Will these blasted interruptions never cease?
I'm so sorry, Dr. Bergerman.
And that's another thing. My name is Bergerman, not Bergerman. I'm not some sort of fast food-based action hero. I'm a scientist.
Oh, gosh. Please do forgive me, Dr. Bergerman.
Oh, close enough. What is it, anyway? The subject is entering the pivotal phase as we speak.
I'm sure he is, Doctor, and I really must apologize for interrupting.
Yes, you really must. Now, what is the matter, confound you?
Well, I'm afraid the small fire from earlier, you remember?
Yes, yeah, well, remember, I'm scarcely allowed to forget about it now, am I?
Yes, and I am very sorry.
Oh, just get on with it.
Well, the small fire which had begun to spread, as you'll remember...
Yes?
Well, it must have spread further than we thought, because... Despite your noble effort with the fire extinguisher earlier, there must have been some small spark remaining because the fire really has taken hold again, so to speak.
Oh, God!
Yes, and it has now consumed several of the offices on this floor, and it's still spreading fast, so the building security staff are advising that everybody leave immediately.
In the name of sweet summer fruits, Larry, is it really all that bad?
Well, as you may have noticed, sir, this room has also begun to be somewhat on fire, and it can only be moments before the fire fully takes hold in here, which really would cause problems for the experiment, if you don't mind me saying.
Oh, goodness gracious. Right, fine. You in the tank.
Yes?
Do you still have a headache?
No.
Brilliant. We'll Venmo you your 20 quid. Now let's get the hell out of here.
What caused the blasted fire, anyway?
They think it was the toaster.
Oh, frigging Kwame and his Pop-Tarts. Who does he think he is? Bart Simpson?
Hello? Doctor? You still there? Hello?
There we are. That's the first section of the show over already. Did you enjoy it? If not, you probably need to get more in touch with the real you. Or the fake you. Or they're both the same thing. To be honest, I've forgotten where we left things. I got distracted trying to disentangle these charging cables. Oh, let's just leave it for now and see if anyone called during that last bit.
Hello, this is Crowley Time with me, Tom Crowley, with me, Tom Crowley. We can't take your call at the moment. Please leave your message after the tone.
Life hack! Are you having trouble counting your money? Just open something called a bank account and then put your cash into it. Then the bank turns your money into a number on the internet. Yeah, £4.20!
Available exclusively from Pipplewaite's home warehouse in Gridwixton, Bridgebury. It's the Buy to Let Collection. Are you a buy-to-let landlord, preventing ordinary, honest, hard-working people from owning a home by hoovering up every affordable house, flat, or maisonette? You can, as soon as it hits the market, then charging just above the average rent for that area, knowing that all the other landlords will do exactly the same in a never-ending arms race of escalating living costs? Then the Buy-to-Let Collection is the range for you, you parasite. Look, this Bimberson compact fridge freezer, as small as can conceivably be manufactured under current health and safety and human rights laws. The only available model small enough to fit in between a combi boiler and any cash-only top-up energy meter, while still leaving space for a plastic broom with three bristles and a broken handle. This Bimberson buy-to-let fridge freezer can hold up to a chop and one pint of milk, uses twice the electricity of any model three times its size, and makes a sound like a meat grinder with a flock of angry geese in it. Only £39.99. Not satisfied? Pipplewaite's has a 30-day return policy. Or just tell your tenants that the terms of the lease don't require the landlord to provide food storage space anyway, so they should count themselves lucky. That's exactly the sort of thing you'd do anyway, isn't it, you reptile? And there's more. Check out this pocket dehumidifier from Grendel. Is your buy-to-let property cursed with endemic mold problems brought on by damp? Has the mold started to affect the wardrobes in the bedroom, and now the tenants are complaining that they're inhaling deadly spores every time they put on a shirt they haven't worn for a couple of days? Would solving the problem forever cost less than half of 1 month's rent for the property? Then the Grendel Humidex Pocket 2100 is here to almost help for only £12.99, exclusively from the Buy-to-Let Collection at Pipplewaite's. Next time your povo tenant opens their KFC hole to complain, shove the Humidex Pocket into it. Then simply tell them to put the unit in the pocket of their clothing when they get dressed in the morning, and hey presto, you've done your due diligence in attempting to mitigate the problem just enough that no legal proceedings can be taken against you in the event of ill health or damage to property. Whether the Humidex Pocket makes any difference whatsoever, or whether it's just a little whirring box with an LED in the top. Just £12.99 or three for £30. Exclusively for bone-idle pieces of human shit like you at the Buy-to-Let Collection from Pipplewaite's. But that's not all. When all else fails, there's always this titanium baseball bat from McKinnamony Sports Supplies. Simply combine with a large man who doesn't ask too many questions to resolve any pesky lingering tenancy disputes. Only £24.99 from the Buy-to-Let Collection at Pipplewaite's. Still not convinced? Just remember that as soon as the tenant lapses in their rent payments, their lease becomes invalid, and they technically become strangers that have invaded your property. So any mishap that may befall them can be classed as self-defense. You hold all the cards, and they haven't got a legal leg to stand on. So take advantage of the Buy-to-Let Collection at Pipplewaite's, just like you take advantage of everyone and everything else in your life, you hideous work-shy fuck pig. That's the Buy-to-Let Collection at Pipplewaite's Home Warehouse. Fit for human habitation, but only just. Visit today, then burn in hell.
Stupid charging cables! What infernal gremlin from the depths of Tartarus entwined you? Fine, I'll never charge my toothbrush again. I'll just jerk the bristles around my mouth with my hands like an animal.
I've had too much coffee.
Let's check the messages.
Life hack! Are you having trouble measuring your heart rate? Simply buy this little device called a wristwatch, find your pulse in your wrist or under your ear, then measure how many times it beats in 60 seconds. 8, 9. Yeah, 9 beats per minute.
God, you know what I love? Hearing from people. And speaking of which, as I covered in the last episode, listeners, this show now has its very own postal department. If you'd like to give your thoughts on a particular sketch or ask Wingnut for some advice or anything like that, you can email the show at crowleytimepodcast@gmail.com. That's crowleytimepodcast@gmail.com. Send your emails or voice messages there and they'll all end up in the sorting room. So why don't we open it up and find out what you've been sending in?
Oh dear, I thought I was for it then.
Oh, Savaloy. Look, everyone. Oh, sorry, you can't, it's a podcast. Anyway, listen, everyone, it's Savaloy the Postmaster. What are you doing in the locked sorting room, Savaloy?
I think I must have come a cropper if you ask me, Mr. Crowley.
Oh, gosh, I know what must have happened. I must have left you in there when we popped in for a quick look at the post last week. Blimey, Savaloy, I'm so sorry. Are you all right?
Nothing a nice cup of tea won't cure, eh? You know?
That's the spirit. The urn's hot, help yourself.
Oh, mate.
You know, Savaloy, if you just get yourself a mobile, or cell phone, as the Americans say, then you could have rung me and I'd have come and let you out.
Oh, well, I can't see me way around all that newfangled technology, you know, so.
Well, all right, but let's both just be a bit more careful in future, eh?
Quite right, Mr. Crowley. Blimmin' heck, I need the bog.
Good old Savaloy. 101 and still as sharp as ever.
Oh!
That's the supply cupboard, Savaloy. All right, let's see here. 3 pieces of post already. Thanks ever so much, listeners. First, we've got quite a short one from Aaron Rodriguez from Albuquerque, New Mexico, friend of the show. Aaron writes, "Congrats on the latest episode. It was good to hear another Crowley time, and this latest installment was superb. Since listening, I found myself saying unclear, quite a lot." Well, thanks so much, Aaron. Delighted to hear that you enjoyed the last episode and to discover that Albuquerque is real and not just a made-up place that Bugs Bunny had navigational issues near. Next, a message from Fraser Torrey from Hertfordshire. Hi, Fraser. Fraser writes, "I love Patrick McGoohan. You should watch Brand to see how great an actor he was." Thanks, Fraser. I love Patrick McGoohan too. As well as his turns as various weirdos in Columbo, I also particularly liked him in David Cronenberg's head explosion fiesta, Scanners. What's more, a quick search reveals that, yes, Brand is on YouTube. Ooh, a 1959 BBC teleproduction of the Ibsen play. Well, Fraser, as luck would have it, I am a profoundly tragic nerd, and this is exactly the sort of hashtag content that makes my spine quiver, so I'll certainly be adding this to my watch list. Perhaps some of you Crowley pals out there in Podland would like to watch it too. Then you could write in with your own thoughts. CrowleyTimePodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts about Brand starring Patrick McGoohan. And now, finally, this one's got some recordings with it. This one comes from Matthew Stennett from Huddersfield, West Yorkshire. "Hello, Mr. Crowley. For some time now, I've been receiving strange messages that I believe are meant for you. I thought I'd forward them on to you so matters can be resolved. Yours, etc., Matthew." Right, well, let's have a listen.
"Hello, Mr. Crowley. It's Paul. I did it. Used the big bag of doorknobs. You never saw it coming. We can never use that garden centre again, but at least we can be together. I'll fax you through the receipts. Thank you."
Oh, yes, I know what that one's about. Nothing to worry about there, listeners. Let's just move on to the next one.
"Hello. Our records show you were involved in a road traffic accident that wasn't your fault. And to be frank, we couldn't be happier about it. You lanky dipshit."
Well, excuse me. I'm not lanky. I'm only 5'10". Well, anyway, what's this last one?
"Mr. Crowley, we have your results back in, and in all my years as a general practitioner, I have never witnessed as taut an anus in action."
No. Oh, never mind. Okay, never mind that. Oh, dear. Well, thanks very much indeed for passing those on, Matthew. If they'd fallen into the wrong hands, that could have been very awkward. Oh, and he's put a PS. "I have a YouTube channel that nobody ever watches called Firkin on Film. Well, maybe we can change that, listeners. That's Firkin on Film. F-I-R-K-I-N on Film on YouTube. And for your kindness in passing on those wayward voice messages, Matthew, I'm awarding you Letter of the Episode! And for being the Letter of the Episode, you win a free digital download of this show's soundtrack album, Discount Bin. You'll receive your complimentary download code in the post forthwith. And I think that's all the post.
Oh, that's better.
Oh, welcome back, Savaloy. Got your cup of tea?
Oh, yes, sir. Lovely cup. Hit the spot, eh?
Anyway, we're finished with the letters for this episode, so we'd better close up the sorting room.
Yes, sir. Oh, hold on a tick. I left me hat in there.
Listeners, don't forget to email in your comments, questions, or complaints to CrowleyTimePodcast@gmail.com. That's CrowleyTimePodcast@gmail.com. Or you can tweet at @TomCrowley if you want to send a shorter, angrier message. Send in whatever you like, however you like, as long as it won't upset me. Right, time to lock up.
Oh, now where's that bleeding hat got to? Sir, wait, sir.
Whew. Coming up next, we take another sojourn into the sinister in Drama Parlour. Hello? Someone say something.
Spooky evening to you, my fellow voyagers into the murk. I'm Sir Chantley Buffingham, and welcome to my Drama Parlour. Today we return to Gwyneth L. Bodge's chilling novel, The Nutters. Here we go now, back to that little upstairs flat in 1970s London, where madness resides. And we haven't phoned ahead to see if madness is in. But it is. Madness is in. Not the band. Chapter 3. Plans for the Evening.
Corblimey, I'm mad, said Knife Steve. I'm absolutely bleeding loopy, I am.
I know what you mean, said Cruelty Alan. I'm off my picking trolley.
I feel like doing something really bloody weird and mad, agreed Knife Steve. Something like a nutter would do, what with us being the Nutters, eh, Cruelty?
That is the name of our gang, nodded Alan. Our gang that consists of just the two of us. I chose it.
Eh?
Steve wheeled around, brandishing the knife that had given him his nom de stab, which, as we know, was Knife Steve.
I pigging well chose it, you rotten article.
You chose it,
said Alan, knocking over the boiler as he leapt to his feet.
You couldn't choose a pudding to go with your wanker and kidney pie, you daft wally.
Oh, yeah,
said Steve, sticking his knife into all of his own legs to make a point.
Well, you couldn't choose a Governor-General to lead the new independent Bahamas.
No, you're right, I couldn't,
mumbled Cruelty Alan. He then pressed his face into the jet of scalding water which was spewing from the boiler's open exhaust pipe and screamed,
Because I'm absolutely blooming mental!
I'm sorry we ever fought, said Knife Steve, getting leg blood all over the already less than pristine carpet. Two nutcases like us, all we've got is each other.
And murder,
added Alan, as parts of his face sluiced off his head like an overtopped pizza.
Yeah, mustn't forget that,
agreed Steve, carving the word remember into his arm with his knife as an aid memoir.
I love murder.
Me too,
said Cruelty Alan, as his left eyeball popped out and picked up an awful lot of hair and dust on the floor. Alan mused thoughtfully.
I think it's probably my disillusionment with the stifling mores of civilized Western society and the unattainable visions of wealth and success that people of our generation glimpsed all too briefly in the glitz and glamour of the 1960s before we were thoughtlessly cast out into the grinding misery of the working world of the 1970s.
Don't dress it up too fancy, Alan,
said Steve, smashing his face into the nearest wall at an alarming tempo.
At the end of the day, we're just horrible bastards who like hurting vulnerable people because it makes us feel powerful,
he added between smashes.
Yeah, I suppose you're right,
shrugged Alan through gritted teeth as he pulled off one of his fingers.
Suddenly, Steve spat out 12 or 15 teeth and screamed, "All this talk of murder has made me want to murder someone. Shall we go out and knife someone up until they die?"
"No,"
replied Alan, surprisingly. "You what?" gaped Steve, whirling his now 20% flatter face around in disbelief.
"We want to show people that we're really proper serious nutters, don't we, Steve?"
asked Alan, jabbing his knuckle stump into Steve's chest.
"Not half,"
Steve nodded, dislodging several more teeth.
"Well,"
Alan pulled up a homeless man and sat on him. He lunged forward, now eye socket to eye with Knife Steve.
"Why don't we do something really bloody mad and nutty and bonkers?"
"Like what?"
asked Steve. Only it sounded like,
"Off, off,"
because most of his teeth had now fallen out.
"Get your weird mad brain around this one."
Cruelty Alan leapt to his feet and threw his arms open wide, spraying Steve and the room around him with blood from his knuckle stump.
"We're gonna dress up in our gladdest rags, real Sunday best like."
Alan marched up and down the room, pantomiming a swaggering gentleman of means.
"And we're gonna go down the Ritz and get a table for dinner. Flowers, candles, the lot."
"Yeah?"
This was one of the words which Steve could still pronounce accurately, despite the state of his face.
"Then we're both gonna order the chef's world-famous grilled sea bass. Lemon, new potatoes, all that."
Alan was entrancing himself with his own plan. His eye glazed over.
"Yeah, yeah,"
repeated Knife Steve, less out of enthusiasm than delight at still being able to say it.
"Then, when they ask us what we want to drink with the meal..."
Alan paused, salivating at the devious cruelty of what was to come next.
"We'll ask for an aggressive red."
Knife Steve fell out of his boots and crashed through the glass surface of the coffee table in shock.
"Or a ugly nutter, right?"
he exclaimed.
"Oh no, Knifey, I'm a right bloody nutter and a half."
What was left of Cruelty Alan's drippy face split wide in what would have once been a beaming smile, but now looked more like a yellow picket fence sticking out of a casserole.
"Now pick up your teeth and let's twock a lift down to Piccadilly, me old nutcase."
Alan threw on his heavy leather coat, chopped off three of his toes, and then fell down the stairs.
"Out humming,"
said Knife Steve, grabbing most of his teeth and a few peanut shells off the floor and then boshing them into his gob.
"But we can't stay out too late. Mummy's got an opening at her gallery tomorrow morning, and I said I'd serve the canapes."
Knife Steve, very easily led, followed Cruelty Alan's example and hurled himself down the stairs and out the front door into the street outside, where he found Alan trying to bite through a lamppost. The evening had begun very madly, there was no doubt. But even these total nutters couldn't foresee the mad madness that was to befall them that night. End of chapter. Well, listeners, will Cruelty Alan's evil scheme at the Ritz play out as intended? Will Knife Steve's mummy's gallery opening be well received? And what of the mysterious bowler-hatted escargot vendor who shadowed Pissy Keith down the Champs-Élysées in Chapter 2? Find out in the next maddening chapter of The Nutters, when our clammy hands meet once again in the drama parlour. Don't forget your torn denims and your shock martins.
Gosh, pretty full-on stuff, eh, Chuntley?
Yes, an uncompromising depiction of the poisonous influence of the urban decay of the 1970s on the nation's youth.
Well put.
That's what it says on the back of the book, anyway. Where's Savaloy?
I don't know.
Chuntley, you were in films all over the place back then in the 70s, weren't you?
Yes, that really was my boom time. The Devil's Coal Pit, Scream Yourself Dead, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman meets Funky Derek.
Yes. Did you ever make a film anywhere near as gruesome as that book, The Nutters?
Oh, gosh, no. Books was one thing, but you couldn't get away with anything like that on screen, dear boy.
Really?
No, no. You see, back then, the British Board of Film Censors ruled the landscape. If they didn't like your picture, it was chucked in the bin like yesterday's cabbage.
Blimey.
And their standards were very exacting. In fact, this reminds me of a story.
We don't really have time for...
This is the story of how my good friend, horror film director Jimmy Skelton, outwitted the censors and saved one of our finest collaborations. But be warned,
Like every story that involves dealings with the BBFC, it's not for sensitive ears.
Is it over, Casper? Has evil been defeated?
By my troth, Helena, we can but hope.
So, what do you think? I mean, we can shorten the staking sequence and maybe use a less revealing take of Helena's bath, but broadly speaking, I think we're in the right area, aren't we?
Just a second, Jimmy. I've just got to finish this note. Now, are you ready, Mr. Judd?
When you are, Mr. Pleat.
Right. So, Curse of the Vampires, Boudoir, Director Jimmy Skelton.
Yes, yes, come on, chaps. What's the verdict?
Well, I think we're going to have to go back to the editing suite in just a few key areas, don't you think, Mr. Judd?
Oh, I think so, Mr. Pleat.
Such as where? What are your concerns?
Well, come along, Jimmy, dear boy. It might not be the 1950s anymore, but the British public is still sensitive about certain matters.
Oh, like what?
Is scene 19, is it, when they find the cow turned inside out?
Yes, 19.
Well, in that scene there, you have the cow guts splashed all over the farmer's little daughter, face covered in entrails and all that.
Yes.
The daughter has the line, "Oh God, it's everywhere, what's happening?"
What about it?
Blasphemy, Jimmy. In a wide release feature.
And from the mouth of a child, no less.
Oh, do me a favour.
Scoff you may, dear boy, but films have seen a national boycott for less.
Some of the letters I've received, oh, they'd curdle your blood.
So we think better avoided, don't you agree? Ditto scene 34, woman split in half, head to gizzard, found in the corridor.
Yes, yes, I know.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no, good Lord.
Etc., etc.
Frightfully bold, Jimmy.
All right, fine. I think you're being absolutely ridiculous, but you do have final say, I suppose.
Very kind of you to remember, dear lad.
Indeed.
So do you have any suggestions for alterations to the script?
Yes, yes, hold on.
We've still got a sliver of contingency budget. We can get the cast back into the dubbing studio next month. Though we might have to dig into the advertising coffers.
Yes, now, scene 19, cow, girl, intestines.
Yes.
Suggest instead of, oh God, it's everywhere, what's happening, what about, oh fuck me sideways, mother, someone's inverted the pissing cow.
Right, now, that's...
Yes, though I had, oh my fucking life, the cow's fucked, I've never seen the buggering like before, mother.
Yes, good, that's good.
You'd prefer that?
Absolutely, old chap. There's not an iota of blasphemy in there, is there, Mr. Judd?
Not a smidgen that I could detect, Mr. Pleat.
No, quite. So, what say you, Sir Jim?
Well, if you're happy with it.
Good lad.
I had one in scene 12, just going back a bit, Mr. Pleat.
Read on, Mr. Judd.
Now, here you have a dockside bar. Enter Prince Casper, seeking information as to the location of the ship Artemis.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Right? Yes?
Casper approaches Sailor. Casper, do you know the Artemis? Sailor, no, but hum a few bars and I'm sure I'll pick it up, ducky. Laughter all round.
Yes, what's wrong with that? Old jokes banned as well now, are they? Because if they are, you're going to decimate our output.
I'm sure I'll pick it up, ducky, Jimmy.
Yes.
Ducky, Jimmy.
Yes.
Homosexual slang, Jimmy.
In a wide-release British feature film, Jimmy.
Oh, come on.
No, 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 Jimmy. It just won't do. We'll have to find another solution.
Such as?
I had a thought, Mr. Pleat.
Be my guest, Mr. Judd.
Propose that, rather than the offending line, Sailor should respond along the lines, "Never heard of it, you knobby cunt. Now get out of here before I smash in your ring piece with a claw hammer."
Oh, yes, very good. Not in the least, camp.
What?
I had one as well, if you'll permit.
Fire away, Mr. Pleat.
What about Prince Casper, do you know the Artemis? Sailor, no, but I know how to slice a man's face and cock off with one swipe of a sabre, so fuck off.
Bloody hell. That's very nice indeed.
My infinite thanks, Mr. Judd.
Not a sissy syllable to be found.
Indeed not. But which shall Jimmy use for his film?
Christ, don't make me choose.
Language, Jimmy.
Oh.
Yes, I'm afraid that particular agony shall be your duty and privilege, Jimmy.
Yes, yes. Any more, or can I go?
Oh, yes, indeed, Jimmy. Next, we have scene 22. Prince Caspar and Helena in the orchard. Wonderful performance from Buffingham in that scene, I thought, by the way, Mr. Judd.
Oh, and I agree with you, Mr. Pleat, most heartily. Not to overlook the lovely and talented Miss Greenfield, either.
Oh, no, indeed not.
Well, that's very kind, thank you.
So, Helena asks Prince Caspar if they should ask his mother, the Queen, for aid in their quest to retrieve the Vampire King's pickled finger from the monastery, to which Caspar replies, "Curse the Queen, she's a coward and a fool."
Right.
Jimmy. What?
The Queen, a coward and a fool.
And just barely 20 years since the coronation of our dear Lizzie, Jimmy. He's not even referring to that Queen.
The people won't stand for it, you know. The letters I could show you.
Oh, the letters he could show you, Jimmy. They'd put hair on your chest.
They'd drop your testicles an extra inch, Jimmy, I'm telling you.
Believe me, Jimmy, the royal family. It's best just to stay well clear.
All right, fine. Though it's going to be hard to get around it, given the plot.
Do you have any extra dosh lying around for reshoots?
A little, not much. Why?
Well, Jimmy.
Well, what?
We just thought...
Prince Caspar and Helena, they're young, they're in love.
Afraid for their lives as well?
Yes, grasping for succour.
And they're in an orchard.
So
we wondered if it wouldn't read better and make people happier.
Make so many people so much happier, Jimmy.
If Caspar threw Helena's skirts up round her shoulders and did her roughly up against the apple tree.
In the film?
Well, of course in the film, Jimmy, otherwise we wouldn't be bringing it up now, would we?
Two young people expressing their love for one another in the most natural way possible. Isn't that nicer than besmirching the good name of our sovereign monarch, Jimmy?
Well, I don't... I'm not...
Oh, and I did have some suggestions for dialogue as well, Mr. Pleat, if you don't mind.
Not at all, Mr. Judd. So did I, as a matter of fact.
See how this strikes you, Jimmy. Gosh, that's the biggest man's chap I've ever clapped eyes on, and no mistake.
Lummy, gorgeous, I'm harder than a cryptic crossword.
Split me open like a filleted herring, big boy.
I shall do it to you till I can't see or hear.
Ride me to Timbuktu and back, you filthy love jockey.
Consider me your Hannibal, driving my elephant across your Alps.
Baste me with your shortening like a Christmas goose. We could go on.
And we will.
Yes, I shan't be able to sit down until St. Titus's Day.
You're my human codpiece, you buxom sensation, Jimmy.
Batter my clam like a Whitstable oysterman, Jimmy.
The roughness of the bark of this tree is approximately equivalent to how rough a bit of skirt you are, you saucy cow.
Spread your seed over this region of Bavaria like the creme de cassis dahlia in summertime, Jimmy.
I'm coming like the invention of the steam engine, Jimmy.
Storm my bastilles, Jimmy, yes?
Knock, knock, who's there? It's semen, yes?
This reminds me of the time I saw a donkey kick over a vat of yoghurt. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, Jimmy.
That's much better, isn't it, Mr. Pleat?
Oh, yes, Mr. Judd, that's much better.
You see, Jimmy, no need to bring the royal family into it whatsoever, eh, Mr. Pleat?
Oh, I don't know, though, Mr. Judd.
Oh, Mr. Pleat, you are awful.
Did you get all that down, Jimmy?
Not to worry. I've got pages and pages more at home.
Snap, Mr. Judd. We'll have it couriered over to you at the studio, Jimmy.
And we'll expect the next draft in a couple of weeks, eh, Jimmy?
And if you have any trouble finding the funds in the budget for the reshoots, don't worry. Just drop us a line and we'll pay for the blighters ourselves.
Not half, Mr. Pleat.
Now, lunch, I think, Mr. Judd.
Just going to have to stop off at the WC for a spell first, Mr. Pleat.
Oh, good idea. It's so gratifying to play our part in preserving the standards and integrity of the British film industry. Wouldn't you say, Mr. Judd?
I should bloody Coco Finlay.
Ta-ra, Jimmy. All the best.
Hello, Millicent. Yes, a few. Look. Get hold of Buffingham and Greenfield, would you? No, I'm sorry to say. I think they're going to be absolutely delighted.
And so we were. And that's the story of how Harriet Greenfield and I got engaged.
Hang on, that's not what you said. You said that was going to be a story about how Jimmy Skelton outwitted the censors board.
Well.
No, don't just say well. He didn't outwit anybody. It sounds like he capitulated with every single one of their ludicrous...
Come to think of it, I really ought to give old Harry a call. If I remember correctly, there's an orchard not far from where she's living now. Ho, 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 ho! Bye, Tom. Have fun with the thingy.
Oh, have fun with the thingy indeed. Well, listeners, that's just about all we've got time for. I hope this episode has provided some food for thought and helped you to connect with the real you deep down inside yourself, where I hope you have slightly overdone it on the free samples from the patisserie, tried out the vibrating massage chair on the concourse, and retained your sense of self, despite the infinite hall of mirrors, all reflecting a side of yourself onto a side of yourself onto a side of yourself, and that you've remembered your ticket for departure from the multi-story parking self. Thank you for joining me on this journey through joy, pain, barbarism, nobility, and mostly filth this time, let's be honest. If you enjoy this show, there are several ways you can help me out, some of which don't even involve spending any money. Firstly, and most obviously, you can tell a like-minded friend about the show. Whether you do that by texting or messaging them something like, "Hey friend, cool speedos you've been rocking on the gram lately, I like it. Have you heard this mega cool sound experience called Crowley Time? I reckon you'd dig it, mama," or saying it to them in person. Secondly, hard though it may be to believe, ratings and reviews on your pod app genuinely do help the show reach more people. So if you have yet to slap 5 stars on my figurative ass, please do it today. For those of you who do want to pledge cold hard cash to the cause, the most direct way to keep this show going is to become a supporter of it on Patreon. To those of you who are already doing that, thank you. And I've got good news. This episode's bonus material is a whole new bonus podcast feed. Due to popular demand, I've dug into the inner workings of the code at the heart of Patreon and read the FAQ section on the website to learn how to set up a separate feed for all the audio-based bonus material that's been released over the last 3 years. And bingo, it's there right now. I've also relabeled all the old posts to make the bonus feed easier to read, and added a few new posts to make some of the chunkier bonus material, including last Christmas's audiobook, The Book of House Name Not Available, and the show's first soundtrack album, Discount Bin, easier to listen to on the go, just like a regular podcast episode. To find out how to get your supporter-exclusive podcast feed, go to patreon.com/CrowleyTime. And if you'd like to sign up to get all these goodies and more for only $2 per episode or local currency equivalent, that's where you should go too. patreon.com/CrowleyTime. The next episode will be released as soon as UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres comes up with a new idea for a really catchy hit song. So make sure to subscribe, so you'll be alerted at the precise moment that happens. Everything you've just heard was made by me, Tom Crowley. Please submit all praise, questions, or complaints to @atomcrowley on Twitter or email crowleytimepodcast@gmail.com. To help me set up my back alley, no questions asked elbow patch sewing on business, go to patreon.com/crowleytime and become a supporter today. Or if you'd like to help but you don't want to set up a recurring donation, go to crowleytime.com and buy a copy of Discount Bin, this show's first soundtrack album. And remember, this podcast is non-fungible, unless through some mishap or other, it becomes funged, at which point it will have proven to be fungible, and as such will be reclassified as a fungecast. But until such time, please do not attempt to funge this podcast.
Life hack! Are you having trouble finding your children? Try standing in the center of your home and shouting their name. Then the corresponding children should appear soon after. Michael! Yeah, 3 Michaels!